Blog Talk Radio.
K-Rod Radio, and this is Patty Holtran, and sorry that I am running late trying to get in. Skype sometimes just doesn't work right. So anyway, technology. It's a wonderful thing when it works. Unfortunately, it didn't work, so I'm on cell phone, and hopefully we'll get knocked off. Until then, I know that Ron's already waiting. Hey, Ron.
Hello.
Hey. Sorry about that. The connections were awful. So
it's like you said, technology, it happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful thing, but when it works, but when it doesn't, it's just really bad. So
I kept trying to get in,
you know, it wasn't going to work. So just, I'll forget it. I'll just go through the cell phone. So.
Well, I'm on my landline, yeah, just like you suggested. In fact, I'm on my one phone in the house we have plugged into a wall. So, boy, it's a secure line if you've got one.
Yeah, unfortunately, cell phone's all I got. So, you rely on Skype to do almost everything, and their lines are all busy. So, you're just going to have to do something about that.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so we're here.
Yes, we are. I'm glad to be here. It's worth the wait just to say, hello, Patty. How are you doing today? It was great seeing you last Saturday at CopperCon. Great to meet Ellie Modisette Jr. and all that. Great time.
Now, you were just there on Saturday, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Next year, I'll try to come a couple more days.
Well, Saturdays are, you know, the busiest day there. There's so many things to do. So many things, and you know, they had quite a bit of science. Apparently, the science panels were just completely packed. So that's
yeah, the panels were great. Absolutely.
Now, is this your first CopperCon?
Yes, it's my first CopperCon. It's been a year of first for me as far as those things go. It's my first Comic-Con too. So.
Oh, you're just a newbie all around, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, the book came out in the spring of 2012, so yeah, my first book fair was in Flagstaff in May of 2012, so yep, I'm starting out.
Well, there you go. It's always a good, I mean, you just got to get started sometime, right? So
absolutely.
Here you are. So for those who are just coming in, this is Ron Tobin. He is an author, and he's written one book so far. Second one now. The second one is going to print pretty soon, correct?
Well, I am hoping so. I am shopping around now for a publisher for my second book.
Okay, that's right. Because you wanted the first book was with one publisher, and then they are kind of going with a different format. You know, different types.
You know,
of books,
I have nothing but good things to tell you about my first publisher. They're great people, fantastic people. But my vision is different from theirs, and so it's called
exactly.
Okay, as opposed to, so that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, and I am very hopeful to get it out early next year or maybe late this year. We'll see.
Sounds good. It's, you know, it's a good time to be an author, really, because of the fact that there's so many options, and you know, there's a lot more smaller publishers now. You know,
yes.
All presses, and so you have an option. It's just finding the right fit.
Exactly.
And,
so.
Yeah. And I know because you know, here I was published my own book, but then I turned around and now getting it republished through a local small publisher. So that way, And then also some of my other works from others in California. So there you go. You just have to keep,
exactly.
You gotta keep trying.
Absolutely, and I am determined because, yes, I have a 10-book story arc planned out in my head. I have the first 5 outlined anyway, so I started work on the 3rd one already, so I intend to keep on being out there and having more and more books available as the years go on.
Now, you're getting started older, yeah, and so many authors are like that. You know, you already had a full career doing something else in your life, and then, you know, you get a certain age and you say, you know what, it's time for you as a person to get your work out, to get that book out of your head.
I totally agree with that. With me, I actually first started writing publicly in 1980 at the age of 19. I actually wrote a political manifesto at the age of 19, and I'm very glad that it has since gone away. Yes, I still have a copy of it, but no, I'm not going to republish it. And then from 1981 to 2005, I put out a newsletter called The Thought, which to this day is in the New York Public Library and other libraries. I'm very proud of it. I made lots of friends that way. But yes, now I would like to continue writing novels and communicating ideas and entertaining people at the same time.
Just so that everyone know, you know, we don't have to be talking to CNI. So I know there's a couple people there listening. So, you know, the phone call, you can call in just like I did. But I had a different number than you guys. But my call in number is 714-242-5145. So, you know, you guys can call in, and just if you don't want to call, then there's the chat. Down below the information about the show, and you can, you know, write your question or comment there, and I'll share it at any time during the show. So you got started later, and you know, apparently you're going along pretty well now. You've got the first, second, and I read something about the 3rd book being worked on.
Yes. Maybe I had something of a leg up as opposed to with some people, because 1989 and 1990, I wrote a series of short stories that a lot of the plot line for these books is taken out of, although not all of it. A friend of mine, after my wife really encouraged me to go back to writing, because she could tell I loved it and she thought I was good at it, and I hope some other people agree, I happen to, but hey, a friend of mine said, you should really revisit those short stories. I think you can build something with it. So I did, and I said, well, I don't want to write a 1980s period piece, but these characters, this plot line, sounds good. So I revamped it and got it out.
And here you are.
Yes, and here I am.
So I saw your cover, your first one. So tell us how you came about, you know, pulling the elements for that.
Well, that's interesting, because fortunately with my publisher, and yes, I'm going to go ahead and identify them, Take Publishing, they're in Oklahoma, very, very nice people, like I said. They have in-house editors, in-house interior designers for the book, and in-house cover artists. So yes, the cover artist and I sat down, and we ferreted out ideas, and then she sent me 3 different possible covers after we had talked about it at some length. But yes, the moon, of course, is, you know, to set the mood for a tale that involves vampires. And she thought the Washington Monument would actually look kind of like a fang. And on the hardcover especially, I think it truly does. A hardcover is a work of art, truly. And my wife used to say, well, let's use the lettering from the first option and the photo from the 3rd option. So, the cover artist did that and put out what I can regard as being a very handsome cover for the book.
So you didn't have much say then, is what you're saying?
I had say. Not tons of it, no. But I am very satisfied with how it turned out, because, yes, the cover artist and I talked at quite a bit of length. That you came up with 3 ideas.
That's good. And, yeah. And, of course, we've got the moon in there.
Yes.
Huge, of course, it's just kind of important to the element to your story, the moon.
Right. Since the main character Victor Trent is not, a lot of the characters are vampires. My vampires are different from the classical vampire in many ways. For one thing, they're not undead.
So I take it that you like vampire stories.
Well crafted ones, yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, now, well, it's kind of like time travel. I don't like every time travel, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I've read some outstanding time travel stories, and I'm looking forward to reading yours, because I'm going to. It's on my list. But no, you're right. Then you understand. It's called what? I have a standard. It's called, if you're telling me a vampire story, the vampire doesn't reflect in the mirror, I'm immediately going to shut you off, because if there's no reflection, you're not going to see it anyway. Because everything
right.
you see is a reflection. So it's like, okay, that's hokey. Next, you know.
So you're saying that you try to stick with some of the old folklore behind vampires? Yeah, you know, the old things like, you know, not being able to see them and the reflection in the mirror, that kind of thing.
I have little use for the old folklore, actually. I mean, yeah, if you can't see them in a mirror, it's called, wait a second. But if you can't see something in a mirror, that means you're not going to see it at all. And,
right.
You know, and also, fear of holy symbols. Well, what if that vampire was Jewish? Why would they care about a cross? to put it mildly, come on, let's think about it.
Right, and think about, you know, the holy water. Exactly.
Again, yeah. Okay, let's suppose the vampire is an atheist. Okay, what have you done? there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, my vampire's got all kinds of different walks of life.
Yeah, it reminds me of something that's going around on Facebook right now, where it has like a list of things that you can be damned for if you get into these things. And of course, vampirism is one of them.
Oh yeah.
and I wrote in there that narrow-minded thinking should be on there as well.
Agreed. I am a spiritual person, but the divine in my world has a sense of humor. So yeah, and I'll leave it at that. Thank you. And
all right, right. You know, you can't really separate sometimes the belief of vampires from your religious belief, because some people will say,
right.
Well, you know, you can't believe in vampires if you believe in God, which is ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you say, well, you know, there's no Santa. Well, yeah, as far as we know. But, you know, at one point in time, every folklore comes from some kind of truth.
Oh, absolutely. I don't discount any legend, because if somebody were to ask me point blank, do you believe in vampires, I'll put it this way. There's so much out there in the historical record. There's so many stories that there has to be a kernel of truth somewhere. And what I tried to do with my story is say, okay, if vampires do exist, what might they be like? What might have really caused them to exist? And so that's what I came up with.
Exactly. So, okay, so you got started late. And is there any other story? I mean, these are going to be like all part of the same continuing story right now, right?
Well, the initial story arc, yes. Do I have other ideas? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All I need to do is get myself in a position where I can not have to do my present-day job, and then I can be totally creative, because what do I do for a living right now? I'm a financial controller. It means I do accounting. You know what happens to you if you're creative in accounting? You go to prison. Mm. Why? Because that means you're cooking the book, so you should go there. Writing lets me be creative. I can use my imagination. When I'm doing
right.
the numbers, you can't use your imagination with that. It's like the numbers are what they are, and they have to be what they mean. You could not like what they mean, but that's what it is.
And now,
writing,
I know that...
I'm sure you, as writing, as I'm sure you know, it gives you a creative outlet.
So what other folklore or stories do you believe in? If you believe in that, you know, vampirism, do you get it all into werewolf type of stories or not?
I enjoy those kinds of stories. Get well written. Whether or not I would write one, I would say probably not. I am looking at doing some straight fantasy eventually. And by straight, I mean full-on fantasy, not straight as in straight. For example, I think I could do a credible novel about the fae, fairies, and that sort of thing. And I'd enjoy it. It'd be a great flight of fancy, the story of a dragon and a fairy princess, for example. I could make one that would be one that adults could read and possibly relate to. I say the sky's the limit with an imagination like I have, and I have a great imagination, and that's probably what saved me over the years with the kind of jobs I've had. At least I could daydream. At least
so,
I could daydream.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about when you were a child, would you read a lot and fantasize about stories or tell stories?
Yes. The first thing I tried writing, which never did see public eye, was I wrote up this thing with some hand-drawn comics, and believe you me, I can't draw, so I still have a couple of them in the drawer somewhere, but they're not going to be published either. I called it the Alchemist Gazette. It was supposed to be a buying guide in humor magazine. I look at some of those jokes, I said, I thought that was funny. Well, I was 13 years old, so it was probably hilarious then. I tried writing my first novel, actually, in high school. I dabbled with a science fiction novel about a giant solar flare hitting the planet. And I did a couple others, one of which I do still have, but I've read it over, and it's so disjointed, I don't think I could put that one together. But, yeah, I've long been a keen reader. I read at least 50 books a year. My wife actually reads well over 100 books a year. Reading's my escape, and when I was a child, it was really my escape.
Yeah, I have a lot of authors who write later in life that say that too. That they wrote when they were younger to escape something. And so, what stopped you from writing later? I mean, have you been writing a little bit ever since, or you just suddenly pick it up again?
Let's see, in the 1980s, like I was saying before, in the 1980s I ran a small press newsletter. It was called The Thought, and it did have some international circulation. It was a very small circulation, but I met a lot of great people through it. I published some stuff by other people as well, had in-print debates. At that point, I was really interested in writing philosophical essays and things like that. I kept on doing that for most of the 1990s, and up until 2005, when I stopped for various reasons. But I say, once I met my wife and she got my she helped me get my head back on track, she said, "You love to write, it's in your nature, so go do it." So I started sitting down and did it. You know what? The hardest thing probably was just getting started. The first sentence of that book was the hardest one to write.
Oh, sure. Sure. That's definitely true, and you know, almost ought to have to throw away the beginnings of almost any of book that you write the first time.
Oh sure. But like I say, just to say the most forbidding thing. I mean, even though now we use computers, it was the computer screen, but it's that blank page. that's like my God! Now I have to put something here.
That's definitely daunting.
Oh, yes.
But
once it gets rolling, it's great.
There you go. So what motivates you to write now?
I have stories that I want to share with people that I think are worth sharing with people. I enjoy now getting out there to the book fairs and to the various cons. For example, I am going to be one of the vendors at the 2014 Phoenix Comic Con, so I'm plugging myself right now. I'm going to be there. I've got my table. And I'm going to be at the Sedona Book Fair in October. I will go back to the Tucson Book Festival in March. I've already put in my reservation for the Author's Pavilion there. And I just like being able to use my imagination in a creative way and make a little bit of money doing it. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Not a thing.
So I have a review of your book from done by Jan Zepp, and she was saying that she would love to read anything from you on politics. She said, "I would love to read Victor's paper on politics." He thinks your main character,
Yes.
Victor Trent, is presently with a very anti-establishment personality.
Yes.
What do you have to say
yes,
about
he
that?
He was. Well, yeah. So somebody's bound to ask, are most of the ideas that Victor Trent espouses, are they ideas I agree with? Well, I'm not going to tell you they're not, but that's why getting this job with the congressman, oh, this is horrifying for him. I mean, this is like he feels like he's selling his soul, but unfortunately, he has all this student loan debt, and we're talking about 2008 when the bottom fell out of the market there, and so it's like, what are his choices, which is what the vampires agree with. Well, so we'll get him into Washington, D.C. He'll hate it there, and of course, he does hate it there. But boy, does he ever learn a lot. In the second book, he learns even more. And then the third book, the focus shifts to Victor's sister, Zoe. And that's as far as I'm going to say at the moment.
Hey, you don't want to give it away, huh?
No. But yes, I have, my personal philosophy is live and let live. I mean, I believe in do it yourself, or be able to keep what you earn, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, I'm not anti-social, heavens no, but I believe if you want something, you go earn it. You go make it yourself. You don't expect somebody else to give it to you. So.
Exactly.
So that's
the way a lot of young generation is thinking that nowadays. It's like they have the right to whatever it is, and it's like, no, you don't have the right. You need to work for it. You'll just get it because you're born.
I do so hear you, but let's be honest. Plenty of people our age feel the same way. They just express it differently.
That is true, but I have a 19-year-old, so.
Oh, well, okay, exactly. I mean, come on. There's great young people out there, like Jen Zepp, for example. Now she definitely works for what she has. An outstanding writer. I really enjoyed her book about the pirates. Fantastic. I'm going to read her Trolls book shortly.
Yeah, her troll story is a very well written fantasy. It's a fairy tale, and it's terrific.
Yes,
well done.
Absolutely.
Of course,
I
can say that because I published it for her. So.
Fine. You're biased, but gee, you know what? So am I. You know, but I must say, yes, I really like Jen as a person, absolutely. But you know what? Her writing is her writing. Her writing is very, very good. And even if I didn't know her, I'd say this is good stuff. Definitely.
And, let's just talk about that for a second. She kind of really gets into the world of the pirates. Okay. Like, I mean, she's a group. So, and then, of course, she goes to events dressed as a pirate. She becomes that character. Mm-hmm. Commodore Max is her friend.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was
kind of hard for somebody like you to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that is true, although I am talking about it. At some point, I could probably, in fact, at some point, I will be interested in getting a couple cosplayers to come with me. And because after all, I know I can visualize in my mind what these characters are supposed to look like, and I'm sure somebody could do it. And it would be, that would be marvelous. I mean, I could play one of Victor's relatives. Because yeah, if somebody asked me if Victor, somebody asked me if Victor Trent was patterned after me, I said no. He's patterned more after the kind of person I would love to have had as a son, but no, he's not me. But there is a character in the novel that is based on me, but I'll leave that up to the discerning readers to figure. Although he is a tricky figure as well, like by Victor. Yeah. Yeah, go on.
Yeah. You said that that you don't think that just because it has vampires in your story that it has to be a horror. It's just more of an element rather than a genre.
Yes, thank you. Horror is a specific genre. I agree, but I don't think I think you could have a werewolf story, for example, that wouldn't be horror. Or, even a zombie golem type story, you could have it and not be horror. I mean, is there violence in my book? Yes, there's some violence in the book. Well, so there is in the real world as well, but. To me,
right,
it's like,
right.
Immediately you say the word vampire, people are like going, oh, it's horror. Well, no, this is really a story of a young man coming to grips with a world he never envisioned was the case and learning a heck of a lot about himself and other people in the world around him. And it's very eerily like our world because, well, I basically threw him into our world and threw vampires in it, And he finds out who's more honorable, the vampires or the politicians.
Which is only appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. So,
if they're bad vampires.
Right, exactly. There are some really, some of the vampires are very nasty. In fact, one of the ones that's becoming something of a, getting a cult following all of his own is one named Lester Dustin, but he's like the consummate monster. He wants to go around. He's ticked off because these other vampires don't want to go out and just kill people and rampage and that sort of thing. So he's like the ultimate bad boy there. Whereas I have one vampire who's been an accountant for 700 years. She's very good at it.
So you had an interesting concept here in that the characters, the one of the characters didn't like the fact that, some of the things that he had to deal with, like, not being able to see the sunrise and having to drink blood of, humans.
Right.
Or drink blood, period.
Right. Yes,
he was doing research up in space. Is that was that the idea?
Yes, the good doctor who invented the order. Which yes, anybody who wants to read that little paper can go to my website www.ronaldctobin.com. That was talking about how the order came to be. How the order came to be, and yes, it's like. Yes, he was very distressed and disturbed by it, but yeah, it was military-type research and also research being pushed by some major consortiums that, yes, came from another planet. And yes, starting to say there's allusions to the off-planet stuff in A Ruby for Venture. There's more of it in the second book, which I tentatively have titled Debts of Blood, but that could change when it gets published. A lot of that depends upon negotiation. But in the third book, yeah, there'll really be some stuff in there because as the series progresses, I want it to be more and more. I want the science fiction elements to really be more and more of the tale. Although the vampires will always be there. Because they're my friends. A lot of them have been my friends in my head for over 20 years, and I will not abandon them.
I liked your idea. Do you think we will ever do without vampires? That we need them as far as believing in something else.
You know what, to me, has always been the most interesting, well, always, okay, since I've been an adult, hard to speak for when I was a child, because, yes, I used to watch Dark Shadows when I was 9, 10 years old. Why? Because my parents said, don't watch it. So I did, of course, and, you know, I've watched a few episodes in as I've been older, and I said, you know, this really was lame, but but yes, anyway, getting rid of the vampire, I doubt that in the end, I mean, sure, their popularity ebbs and flows. For me, the thing that was interesting about being a vampire was the ability to, as long as you didn't go around and totally risk yourself and get hunted down by people, is how you could just endure for centuries. I mean, I was just thinking, wow, imagine all the things you could see and do. Because I'm one of those people who... I would have loved to have been able to work in a research library and actually hold the tomes. And, well, you know, in the Ruby for Victor, one of the vampires uses about how she thinks it's funny when these guys call her young lady. She feels like telling them she used to watch the lighthouse keepers at Pharos, the big lighthouse there, and Alexander used to watch them stoke the fires there. So she thinks it's hilarious that they don't realize she's over 2,000 years old. Yeah. She gets a kick out of it.
So if you had a, you know, avid or rabid, depending on where you look at it, vampire reader, do you suggest that they read your series?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
The only exception I would make to that is if you only want vampires who are going out there and bite people's heads off and that sort of thing, well, more power to you. There's other authors I could point you towards. But if you wanted to have these vampires, some of which are very nasty, some of which are not, some of which are people you would walk around down the street and you wouldn't even realize it. If you don't mind thinking about things and looking at the world in a slightly different way, then yeah, my stories will be a great place for you to be.
What do you like about certain other people's books? Have you read other vampire stories that you particularly like or not like?
Oh, sure. Funniest thing is, one of my favorite science fiction writers, L. Neil Smith, he always said he hated vampire stories. Then he wrote one. And it was good. It was really good. The vampire was an attempt. In fact, at the end, he liked it so much, he's working on a sequel. He was saying, I never thought that would happen. But yeah, it was well done, well played. I also, it's interesting, when I first started writing my vampire stories, that's when I came across Anne Rice. Her first three vampire novels I thought were really quite good. Interview with the Vampire was the book, quite good. The movie, well, any author, I think, cringes inwardly, but we'll say, well, we'll take the money, we know it's not going to resemble what we wrote. Anne Rice's were good. The guy who wrote the Necronomicon series, his name is escaping me. He wrote some really good vampire stories. And Bram Stoker himself, the original Dracula, is really kind of different than what most people really think. Because in the original novel, Dracula could walk during the day. He just had to protect himself. So, I've enjoyed all those. I've enjoyed all those. I mean, as far as a good monster story, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, I think, remains a classic.
Why do you think that the Bram Stoker's version of Dracula stuck in the minds of readers for so long?
Hollywood. Honestly, Hollywood. I think Hollywood took it and ran with it. It's a really good story. And I think that they did. And then, of course, they had Bela Lugosi and the other guys, and of course, yeah, the infamous Plan 9 from Outer Space and all that. But I don't know. I think it kind of appealed to
me. We saw that a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I've seen it more than once, and every time I go, oh, this is so bad, but it's funnier than all get out. and it was bad. I mean, let's not. I mean, it said, yeah, it's bad, but yeah.
It's bad to the point of absurdity. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly, and that's what makes it funny. I mean, yeah, can a movie be bad and be hilarious? Well, yes, and Plan 9 makes that great. So, yeah, I think that Hollywood did that, and of course, with the Nosferatu, and then, of course, I think Anne Rice's book made it so vampires didn't necessarily have to always be just killing machines. But Bram Stoker's Dracula wasn't always a killing machine either. But she tended to make the genre stand on its head a bit. I mean, some people don't appreciate it, but I do because, well, her work captured my imagination. And like I say, the first three I really enjoyed. The other ones, not quite as much. But I will not take anything away from
them. I find that authors get a little more bolder with their, you know, whether it's more violent or whether it's more sexual, you know,
mm-hmm.
Depending on what kind of book it is. They get more bolder in books after the first few.
Yeah, and not that I have anything against erotica or that sort of thing, but it's not what I intend to write. I want to tell a story that I can, you know, sneak ideas into and sneakily get people to maybe think about something different. I'm not trying to change anybody's mind by writing my book. I mean, if you read my books, yeah, you'll find out a lot about what I believe politically, but am I bothered if you don't? No. I hope you like the stories. and one thing the readers of Ruby for Victor will notice is, even though it's pretty clear who I'm talking about, I do not name names of the big-time politicians that were around in 2008, 2009. Even though you'll know that's who I'm talking about, I don't name them. And I did that on purpose.
Well, that's just it, you know, because we do write what we know. And
exactly.
Our personalities do get into, the characters do take some of our personality.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it was funny.
There's no way not to.
Absolutely. Because one thing that was funny was my now boss, when the book came out, asked if any of the characters were based on him, and I just looked and I said, oh, no. that's the truth. None of the characters in the book are based on people that I work with. Not this book, anyway. Now, some other book? Yeah, problem.
You know, if we're gonna give our characters, you know, something that we don't have, then that's even better.
Of course, exactly. I mean, of course,
they can be younger.
Absolutely. Now, of course, did I draw on people I know? Well, of course, unconsciously for the most part. Yes, consciously in a couple cases, certainly, but nobody's going to be able to read my book, I don't think, and say, hey, that character is based on me. If somebody actually figures it out and they know who they are, well, I'll shake their hand and say, wow, you're pretty astute. I thought I had covered it.
And hopefully in a good way.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Nobody should be. My family is not as dysfunctional as Victor's family is. Victor's family put the dis in dysfunctional, not the fun in dysfunctional.
So your family really is, like, behind you 100% when it comes to writing.
My wife, absolutely. My uncles, absolutely. My parents, yes. As a matter of fact, they are. They've helped me with getting to book festivals and things like that. And my uncle put me up for a few days when I went to the Southwest Book Fiesta in May in Albuquerque. That was a great experience. Met all kinds of good authors. Made new friends. You can't ask for more.
No. And the thing is that my dad always says, whenever he sees me, so this writing thing, you know, you're going to be able to take care of us when we get old? Of course, they're already old.
No.
I'm like, well, not on my writing, no.
I will especially give my father credit because he helped me even back in the days when I was publishing the newsletter. He was always encouraging. He didn't always agree with what I wrote, certainly not, but he was encouraging of it. And when I decided to write the novel, he was, and my mother is too, but he was particularly. And of course, my wife, absolutely, she's my rock, and I will say I couldn't do it without her.
Yeah.
Because yeah,
she helped you edit.
Was she your
first reader?
She was my first reader, along with a couple of friends of mine who I've known for over 20 years, friends that were familiar with the original story and that sort of thing. So, yes. But I will say one of the reasons why I definitely will go with another small publisher is that I really can't say it enough. If you're going to self-publish, you really want to invest in an editor. You've got to, because, yeah, I mean, yes, I was an editor for 20 years in the newsletter. Do I know how to edit? Yes, but when it's your own stuff, you're going to start filling in words and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You just do. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter how good you are. You just do.
Yeah, but it's not. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you read it five times. What do you mean it's not there?
Maybe it's not there. He's in there saying, no, I know I wrote that there. And, you know, we take out things or, you know, as we're editing, and then we still think it's there and it's not. You can't edit yourself. There's just no way to do that.
No. No, I mean, and I will never say anything. The editor that Tate Publishing provided for me, she was top notch, and kudos to her. And I wish her well. She was great, yeah, and she helped make.
She was rough on
shine.
You.
Yeah, but you know what? It was good. 90% of the stuff she suggested, I said, yeah, that makes sense. There are a couple of things that she and I debated on, and in the end she agreed with me. But okay, fine. I mean, there's give and take involved in the editing process. Because
you gotta fight sometimes for your words.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Because there was one scene that I thought was really important. I said, You may not see this important in this first book, but if it's not here, as the series goes along, readers are going to say, why is she acting this way? And so she said, okay, you're right. And
is there any other genre that you'd like to try?
That I would like to try, besides science fiction and fantasy. You know, I've read some really decent mysteries. I wouldn't mind at some point taking a crack at writing a mystery. And in fact, the fourth book in my series is going to have some mystery elements in it, because it's going to involve the theft of a precious object. So there'll be some, and depending upon how I feel about how that goes, I'll see if maybe I can really write a mystery novel. That'd be quite a change. Because, yes, until not too many years ago, I didn't usually read mysteries, but one of the things my wife has done is introduce me to some really good mystery novelists. And I said, wow, this is actually a pretty cool genre.
Well, you know, I always say that there's always some element of mystery in every book. Otherwise, why would you be writing it?
That's true. And my books will always have at least the one main plot line, but I interweave a couple of pretty decent subplots in it, so the reader needs to pay attention and digest sometimes, I will say. Because otherwise something's going to happen, you go, I missed that. No, you don't want to miss that. And all you need to do is just keep reading, pay attention, it'll work out. It will indeed.
Joe, if you won the lottery tomorrow, would you keep writing?
Oh, heavens, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, my, yes. What I would do if I came into that kind of money is I'd get myself some property either up in the White Mountains or across the border in New Mexico. I build myself a cabin. I mean, I would keep a residence here in the valley, too, of course, because... Well, you know, Phoenix and Tucson, that's where everything's really happening for the most part, 90% of the time. I mean, sure, there's some events in Flagstaff, and Events in the white mountains that have much to do with publishing are pretty sparse, but it'd be a great place to live and write peacefully, and I could get used to that. I could get used to that, and I'd love to have that kind of a problem.
Yeah,
I would
true.
Love that.
Yeah.
I would love that.
I was reading about your inspirations. Maxwell Alexander Drake, he lives in Nevada area.
Yes.
What inspired you about his writing?
Oh, he is, his Genesis of Oblivion series, which his third book will be coming out. He says really soon, he's apologizing for the fact it's been delayed a bit, and I told him to his face, I said, don't let it out until you're happy with it, for crying out loud, don't. I mean, I really enjoyed the fact that he was able to write this fully immersive fantasy world, a completely different world, and it just draws you in. It's so, the man's brilliant, and I met him at the convention last year at the Society for Southwestern Authors in Tucson, and I made a point of taking his panels because it sounded so interesting, and I was just riveted to what the man had to say. And he's great in that he's willing to share his time and talents and help other writers. But, of course, he says, I'll always be better than you guys. Well, you know, fine, that's ego, but you know what? You've got to have some ego, otherwise.
Yeah, I've been at the Tucson Festival book, so he's been trying to get him to come to the cons. There always seemed to be a conflict in different cons. He's going to right now.
Oh,
for the last 2 years. Yeah. Now we'll get him as far as Tucson, but, you know, that's actually further, I told him. He said, I can't seem to get you in Phoenix, even though you seem to go past Phoenix to go to Tucson. He flopped.
I think what would be really great for Phoenix would be to be able to, I know it will take a lot of work, I'd be willing to help in this work, help, mind you, I am in no position to run the thing, but getting a book festival here in Phoenix comparable to the one in Tucson would be an ace in the hole and would be really good. And I think
talk
it's worth
about
trying.
That, and of course, that's where you used to come from, is from Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
So they used to have one in Phoenix, and then the Phoenix library, the main branch there is where it was recently, you know, before Tucson took it.
Right.
And it moved to Tucson, and it's been there ever since because they had the land, of course, in the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right there at U of A.
There's a couple places, though, here in the Valley that I think could host an event similar. I mean, not that I think that anything here should compete with that book festival. Heavens, no. They've got it made. It's a great festival. It's a great location.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
say I had a great time there this year, and I'm going back for sure. Hopefully, also with the Arizona authors. But if not, I'm going to be in the Authors Pavilion again.
I've been going for Leprechaun or for my own books for the last 3 or 4 years. So it's a great place to go. And, you know, of course, you talk to all the other authors, not just from Arizona, but from other outlying areas. So that's cool to meet people.
Exactly. I mean, by and large, I find that authors are very friendly and I get along well with quite a few of them, and I'm proud to call some of them friends. And I know as years go on, I'll make even more friends with them.
because we
all share a common bond. We're crazy enough to want to go out there and write, and so that means sometimes we get to read reviews that you sit there and go, did you even read the book?
It looks like I'm going to be cut off here.
Oh, okay.
They really mess up. So, 90
well,
seconds.
Thank you so much, though.
Hey, I really enjoyed talking with you as always, and we'll have to do it again when you get your next book out.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you take care, and thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Thanks. Bye-bye. That was Ron, and we are out of time tonight. Enjoyed talking to him. Wish we had would have had no problem at the beginning. We lost about 12 minutes. And sorry about that. And this is Patty Hillstrand signing out for the day. And I will have something else coming up next week. And not going to say who that is yet. So until then, you guys stay cool. Stay cool. Actually, I don't know if I have anything out next week because I'm working on the newspaper. Oh, we'll see. So I'll just keep it a secret until then. So, have a great night. This is Patty Hillstrand, K-Rod Radio, signing out.